Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
And we're into extra time!
Hello and welcome to Extra Time, I'm Barry Guy. The Japanese tennis player Naomi Osaka caused a stir last week when she said she would not be answering any questions from the media. She said the nature of media conferences put undue burden on players' mental health. After being fined for missing her first post-match media session at the French Open, she was threatened with expulsion by Grand Slam organisers. Osaka then decided to withdraw from the tournament, explaining she had been suffering from depression for almost 3 years. The former New Zealand tennis star Belinda Cordwell believes if Osaka hadn't raised the issue on the eve of the tournament, organisers could have taken a different approach.
I think the unfortunate situation here is the timing. So we have a couple of issues here. Naomi Osaka has talked about her mental health battles and that everybody can respect that and everyone needs to. And that's something that I guess she needs to go away and work on and sort out with her team. So that's one issue. But by the same token, she's deciding to enter a tournament where the rules are very, very clear. So it looks from a distance like she's trying to have a cake and eat it as well. And I think in terms of the ITF and the French Federation, this is something that happened upon them a week or two ago. And maybe going forward, there would be some level of discussion around all the organisations and the players and the media to see how everybody can progress forward to, you know, safeguard mental well-being of players and ask appropriate questions and not be too invasive when they are in the press match conferences. But at the end of the day, I think that Osaka was just, in terms of her timing and her message that she was trying to get across, was a little awry.
Other professionals, Rafa Nadal, Ash Barty, for instance, have said, look, these press conferences are fair enough. Is that your position as an ex-pro?
Look, I do agree with them. I like the fact that they came out and said they respected Osaka's decision to make her up her own mind. I agree with them. It's part and parcel of the job. We all have aspects of our job that we may not particularly love, but we do it because that's our job. And I think the disappointing thing from my perspective, reading from afar, is that these types of players have huge amount of support around them. They have a great network of people, their inner circle, who are offering advice and support. And I'm quite disappointed to think that her support networks were of such that they allowed her to step into this really sort of dangerous territory, if you like, on the eve of a Grand Slam. And I think that she could have been managed differently by her team so that we could have avoided this.
How did you find the tough questions back in the day?
Look, I mean, it is a little bit confronting and, you know, no one's got massive self-confidence, particularly if you're not playing very well that week. And you do feel vaguely vulnerable, but I think that, you know, on the flip side, it's a matter of building up your own self-esteem and recognising that you can only control what you can control. And if people ask you questions, you can't control what they ask, but you can control how you react and how you answer. And I think it's building up that level of self-confidence and esteem that would stand Osaka in good stead.
That's Belinda Cordwell talking to Max Toll. The former world champion squash player Dame Susan Devoy admits she dreaded media conferences during her 11-year career, and she imagines it's now got even tougher for athletes. Dame Susan believes what Osaka has done has presented the bigger picture of players' well-being and the media's role in that.
Well, I don't know the full story around Naomi, and there's probably a much more that we don't know. We're only hearing in the media. But I think we've got to start looking, well, taking better care of athletes' all-round well-being. And I think the press conference is just one example, but perhaps it's time to look at this very outdated method of questioning and make some really good changes. Because press conference, and with social media and everything, generally athletes these days are not actually being themselves for the fear of, I mean, if you lose in your press conference, it's a terrible feeling. If you win, it's, you know, it's not just good enough to break the performance. It's always like there's some probing that the actual story's not just good enough. I mean, I just listened to Devin Conway. What an articulate, wonderful story about a test debut, you know? And that's what conversations with media, with journalists and sports people should be all about. But it seems to have changed and putting a lot of pressure on athletes.
And conversely, there are those out there that say to be a top athlete, you need to have that mental rigour. That's part of being able to succeed. And that, you know, it's what sets top athletes apart.
Almost definitely. I mean, I would say that, you know, 30% mental and 20% physical when you get to the very top, at least, you know, and you've got to maintain that simply put, mental toughness. But being mentally tough on a sporting, you know, field or on a court or whatever doesn't necessarily always translate into your mental health and well-being. You know, I mean, she's talking about getting anxious. I mean, I felt, you know, probably people didn't know that nerves nearly killed me when I was, you know, competing for nearly 10 years at the top. That relief when I finally retired of not having to go through that anymore was something that, you know, I carried for, you know, was a burden for me the whole of my sporting career. And, you know, a sporting career should never be a burden. It should, as well as hard work, be, you know, a joy and a pleasure.
Dame Susan Devoy talking on Morning Report. We're joined on Extra Time by another former top New Zealand tennis player, Julie Richardson, who was also on the tour around the same time as Belinda Cordwell. She picked up 7 career doubles titles. She's now doing some coaching in the US. And our regular RNZ columnist, Hamish Bidwell. Julie, nice to have you on from the United States. I suppose there's sort of two issues here. One about mental health that we're all have some sympathies for, but also the dig at the media for their role in it, perhaps.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've all been part of this, and I think the there are two separate issues. There's her mental issue, Naomi's mental issue, which is definitely has to be taken seriously, and then there's the media issue. And I think a lot of the questions, not a lot of the questions, but I've watched some of the press conferences, and at the beginning, the questions are all good, and then, you know, they can sometimes dive into an area you don't really want to respond to. And I think that there needs to be more training or more things put in place where only certain questions can be asked. You know, nobody really wants to go up there and be told, oh, you didn't play very well today, or your backhand was terrible, or, you know, something like that. And I think the media could be a little bit kinder to the players. And saying that, the mental health issue is a different, totally different issue and has to be taken seriously. That's something that every family or people walking down the street has. I agree with Belinda as to the timing of this. For her to pull out and go through this on the eve of the French Open is not terribly good. If she's having mental health issues, you'd think she wouldn't be playing at all.
Look, I'm torn in several different directions by this whole thing. And I wrote last week that I don't think anything would be lost if press conferences across the board went by the wayside. I don't believe a lot said that's particularly relevant. I think, you know, we need quotes and all that kind of stuff as written media, but, you know, you can just take those from players' social media. You can take them from the stuff that's burbled and to microphones from the, you know, the rights-holding media afterwards. My experience as a member of the written press is that questions are pretty timid. You might get savaged in print afterwards. Someone might turn around and have a go at you, but they're not going to in front of you because people are shy, and there's also a power imbalance because the athlete earns more, is better looking, is better at everything than you are. So you're very polite to them. You ask these sort of, you tiptoe around things. They say what they say. And then if you want to give them a kicking, if I could put it that way, you'll do it in print. You won't subject them to that in front of people or on a stage. Equally, like if I'm a Osaka and I'm coming into a room with, you know, 20 cameras and 100 journalists and that's pretty lonely and, you know, miserable experience. I'm a little bit, I respect her situation, I feel for her, but sometimes athletes across various sports get themselves into a bit of a pickle and they're in there's an uncomfortable situation, scrutiny's being put on them, and they play the mental health card. It's a bit of a get out of jail. People go, oh, shit, I better step back from this. Let's rally around. Let's support. And I'd hate to think there was any cynicism in the way she's played this card this time. But I'm torn because I sympathise with her. I think from a media point of view, these things are a bit of a waste of time. But, you know, people have paid a lot of money to put her behind. You know, the sponsors have paid a lot of money for the backdrop to be behind her at a press conference. Their sponsors, their logos. Do you know what I mean? And I can see from the French Open organisers' point of view, they need the bang for their buck. And that's putting a face in front of that backdrop. And then are being broadcast around the world. And if she's not going to be prepared to sit there, then she's creating a bit of an issue.
I totally agree with that. I mean, the real issue is Osaka does not perform well in play. So she hasn't in the past. And so she goes to the French Open, she goes to a press conference, straight away is going to be, you know, how do you feel like you can do in play? It's going to produce a negative input into her mind, because she's going to be already asked, you know, how are you going to do on clay? You haven't performed well on clay. You've done well on other surfaces, for example. And, you know, and it's going to set her off right at the beginning. If there, is that a mental health issue for her? I don't know. Nobody walks into her shoes, but as I said, which I really believe, if her mental health issues are that bad, she shouldn't be playing tennis, because it's a very tough mental sport, and you know, she should be getting help. It's not just French Open, it's other tournaments that are, you know, going to be happening, Wimbledon, all that coming up.
Julie, do you think it's become more difficult for players and the questions that go their way because of the immediacy of all the media now, and, you know, it's social media, it's more almost instantaneous, and they're looking for headlines and those sorts of things. Do you think perhaps that this pressure on players is worse than it used to be in your time?
No, I don't think it is worse. I think it's actually better, because the players have a format, they have social media where they can speak out. If you look at McEnroe and Connors and all those guys, they used to get attacked like crazy, front page of the newspaper all the time, especially in England. Way worse than what it is now. And now the players have an outlet. They can go to social media themselves and say A, B, C, and D, and you can read it. We didn't have that outlet when we were playing. I mean, no outlet whatsoever.
I don't think that this is any worse than it was, to go back to your point before. I just think that athletes have always endured this, but they're talking about it now. We listened to Susan Devoy earlier. She experienced this throughout her career, but it wasn't talked about. And the fact that it is talked about now means I think you get a much more sympathetic hearing from journalists in a press conference situation. They're trying to take the adversarial nature out of these things. So to go back to what Julie was saying, I think it is actually better for athletes now than it was before, because we're having this conversation. These things have been brought to light, which always existed but weren't talked about.
Mental health was something that was just nobody talked about. In the US, mental health is a big thing. I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but it's really taken seriously here. And you know, and is she using that as an excuse, or does she have mental health issues? I don't know. We don't know.
So, Julie, there is something to be learned from journalists here, not just here, but around the world, and the way they, you know, attend these and ask questions at media conferences?
Well, I think there's some journalists, you know, there's just like most professions, there's 80% good journalists and there's maybe 20% that are not. I'm just coming up with a number. And the problem that I've seen when I've watched the actual press conferences is that you tend to get, you know, one or two silly questions in a press conference that just turns a player off. It's just like, really, you expect me to answer that? You know, just is totally left wing. And I think those are the kind of things, like the questions that are just not relevant, or they're focused on somebody's relationship or some other issue. Those things should try and be stopped somehow.
Do you feel, though, that, I mean, especially in a Grand Slam tournament, you're playing so many matches that perhaps, you know, is there a need after every match to attend a media conference? But more importantly, I suppose when a big name loses, that's when people want to sort of perhaps know why.
Well, absolutely, and they have a right, because how much are these players getting paid? They're getting paid a lot of money. They have a responsibility. If they're going to play the tournament, they have a responsibility to the public. That's just the way it is. I mean, it's they're getting paid a lot of money. That's part of the job.
Hamish, would you agree with me perhaps, and you mentioned this earlier, I've not found it to be a major issue at media conferences in New Zealand. I think, you know, the questions are quite productive. And any analysis, I think, is more directed towards a coach, perhaps, than the players on the field. I mean, what's your feeling?
Yeah, I would say that 90% of people in the sports media in New Zealand are fans first and journalists second, and their goal is to be liked or to create a collegial thing with the athlete. They love the athlete and they want the athlete to like them, and I find that weird myself, but that's cool. And so the questions are real patsy ones, and you will, as Julie mentioned, get some silly ones, you know, like relationships or, you know, what candies do you like and all that kind of malarkey. Like, give me a break, let's talk about the actual sport. But if you want to talk about rugby and get into some in-depth issues in the New Zealand case, then coaches are absolutely the best. You know, and we were very lucky for a long time to have Steve Hansen here, and I can think back to the British and Irish Lions series of 2017. Anytime Warren Gatland was up as Lions coach and Hansen was up as All Blacks coach, that was compelling. You know, there was a bit of sparring between them and the media. There was a bit of needle, you know, there was a bit of megaphone diplomacy between the two of them, and that was good stuff. But they were experienced campaigners, grown men, robust, who knew their method, had their message and wanted to convey that. And they were far more equipped to do that than any athlete is because of their age and their experience.
I think the age thing is a big thing. I watched Naomi Osaka when she first won Indian Wells a couple of years ago, and she could barely speak. I was surprised. She could, you know, they're doing the interview at the end of the match after she won the tournament, and I don't know why, but she struggled to speak at all. So I think there needs to be more, perhaps more training. I was thinking, at the time when I was watching that, I thought, wow, this is how she speaks. The WTA, or the Women's Tennis Association, should be doing some training on play with players on how to answer questions and how to talk and how to come across to the media, because in essence, you're selling the sport. So
that's a really good point. You have to know your athlete, don't you, as the people who are in their team, or in a New Zealand context, if it's a team sport like rugby, we have Pacifica players, some of whom are very shy. They're very articulate, but, you know, you put them in front of a lot of people, they're shy. You put them in a one-on-one situation with just a journalist, no microphone, just a tape recorder sitting there subtly, they'll talk to you very well, and they'll gain some confidence. Then they'll be able to front the cameras and front the scrums and maybe do a press conference. But you have to educate people and help them and give them the skills to be able to speak to a public audience.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I really do. Because here they are, they know how to play tennis, but have they learned how to speak? Have they learned how to speak in front of a crowd? Do they know how to answer certain questions? You know, whatever it is, they need to be trained.
People tell me, though, members of the public, friends, that we're interested in watching them play. You know, they're there to play, they're not there to talk. How do you respond to that, though?
I totally disagree with that. It's entertainment. It's a form of entertainment. People used to love John McEnroe. They loved his antics. They love listening to him talk. He's a big commentator here in the US right now. You're selling yourself. You're selling the game. You're selling yourself. It's not just the sport. People want it. They want personalities.
Hamish, you just touched on it earlier, and the way that sports now are controlling the media in some way, especially for their sports. Is that the way that we're going, you know, that they provide the interviews and that sort of thing? It's their people that are running the show. And I know I've been to a couple of media conferences where the head of media is coming around asking the journalist what you're going to ask and things like that. I mean, is there going to be a shift perhaps that sports administrators in some way will take more control of how their athletes speak to the media?
We've had that for a long, long time, Barry. You know, you turn up on a day to do a sport and someone's put up, and it's not the person you want to talk to. It's not a person who's particularly relevant. It's probably often not a person who's a particularly good talker, but they are the person who's been put up this day, and you need the content, and you'll interview that person, and you'll like it. And if you don't like it, then you can get lost.
Well, I can tell you one thing. When I was in New Zealand, and I just got back a couple of months ago, whenever there was good news about the you know, COVID-19, Ardern, the Prime Minister Ardern, is on the TV.
That's a great observation.
This is true. I mean, she's on there. The moment there's bad news, you got that other guy, I don't forget his name, but he's coming on and he's doing the talking. She's never doing any talking negative, ever. It's always somebody else who's doing the negative talking.
It is interesting, though, Barry. I think in their heart of hearts, athletes would prefer not to ever have to front the media. They find us a nuisance. We're an intrusion into their lives. We're beneath them. It's undignified for them. They feel that they've reached a status in their life where they shouldn't have to go through this sort of ritual. And I wonder, in turn, how much fans get out of these interactions and what sort of information they're gleaning and how that's helping them connect with the athlete. Or is, as you mentioned before, is it just watching the sport that the fan likes rather than anything the athlete has to say afterwards?
You're turning into boring if you're just going to watch them play tennis. Or any sport. As it is, we're taking away the line calls and all that with all this electronic calling and all that. It's made tennis even more boring because there was an element of the game, you know, a bad line call or whatever that created some tension that the public like.
That brings us to an end of Extra Time. My thanks to Julie Richardson and Hamish Bidwell. Extra Time is available every Friday afternoon. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, and of course at rnz.co.nz. Give us a rating if you would. That helps a whole lot and means other listeners can find us much more easily. I'm Barry Guy. Ka kite anō.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.